Imagine walking into a room and suddenly becoming hyper-aware of your racial identity, feeling your heart race, your words carefully measured, your body tense. For most white Americans, this is a rare, uncomfortable experience. For people of color, it's Tuesday. This stark difference in lived experience forms the foundation of white fragility, a term describing the defensive reactions white people have when their racial worldviews are challenged. These reactions, anger, fear, guilt, silence, aren't just personal discomfort. They function as powerful social controls that maintain racial hierarchy and shut down meaningful conversation about racism. What makes this pattern so insidious is how reasonable it seems. Who wouldn't defend themselves against accusations of racism? But this framing fundamentally misunderstands how racism operates in our society. Racism isn't primarily about individual meanness. It's a system of racial advantage. Most of us believe racists are bad people who intentionally discriminate, leading us to conclude that without harmful intent, we can't be racist. This oversimplified view obscures how racism actually works. We claim race doesn't matter while organizing our lives around racial segregation, choosing predominantly white neighborhoods, schools, and workplaces while insisting we don't see color. This contradiction between our stated values and actual behavior often goes unexamined because it creates discomfort. After the civil rights movement, explicit racism became taboo, but the system adapted. Colorblind racism emerged, suggesting that ignoring race entirely would end racism. This approach labels any acknowledgement of race as racist, effectively shutting down discussions about racial disparities while preserving the status quo. What if instead of asking, "Am I racist?" we asked, "How does racism shape my life, and how am I perpetuating it?" For most white people, race is something other people have. We see ourselves as just people, while viewing others as having race. This invisibility of whiteness, what scholar Peggy McIntosh called the invisible knapsack of privilege, makes it hard to recognize how race shapes our lives. White people move through the world unburdened by race. We don't worry about our race being held against us when applying for jobs, housing, or loans. In professional settings, our mistakes aren't attributed to our racial identity. This freedom extends to physical movement. Consider Lake Coeur d'Alene in Idaho. While a white person might see only a beautiful vacation spot, an African-American colleague might immediately recognize danger, the area's proximity to white nationalist compounds, and the isolation of an all-white environment. This contrast shows how white people move through spaces without the constant safety calculations people of color must make. Segregation teaches white people they lose nothing of value by not having relationships with people of color. How might our understanding change if we recognized what we're missing?
After the civil rights movement, racism became defined in the white mind as intentional, malicious acts of prejudice, creating a stark binary where racists were evil people who chose hatred, while well-intentioned people were automatically exempt from racism. This oversimplified definition made racism and being a good person mutually exclusive. This false dichotomy creates a psychological barrier that blocks meaningful discussion of how racism actually operates. Suggesting someone has participated in racism, even unintentionally, delivers such a moral blow that it typically triggers defensiveness rather than reflection. For example, during a diversity workshop, a white teacher performed an imitation of a black mother using stereotypical speech and mannerisms. When informed about the racial implications, the teacher became defensive, denied any racial aspects, and quit the training, demonstrating white fragility in action. The good-bad binary makes it virtually impossible for whites to acknowledge potentially racist actions, regardless of evidence. What if instead we understood racism as a complex system we all navigate imperfectly? white identity emerged from the need to justify enslaving Africans. The concept of a superior white race was created in direct opposition to an invented inferior black race. One couldn't exist without the other. This dynamic persists through psychological projection, with whites attributing unwanted traits to black people. During slavery, whites labeled enslaved Africans as lazy despite their forced labor. Today, blacks are often portrayed as dangerous despite being historical victims of white violence through lynchings and systemic discrimination. These attitudes influence policy responses. The opioid crisis in white communities prompts calls for treatment, while the crack epidemic in black communities led to harsh policing and mandatory sentences. Similarly, political discourse emphasizes the forgotten white working class while overlooking black Americans in identical or worse economic conditions. Anti-blackness appears both as overt prejudice and false benevolence. Popular films like The Blind Side and The Help showcase white savior narratives that, while appearing sympathetic, reinforce racist stereotypes by centering white perspectives while relegating black characters to supporting roles in their own stories. White people's insulation from race-based stress creates fragility when racial comfort is disrupted. When ideologies like colorblindness and meritocracy are challenged, intense emotional reactions emerge as anger, fear, guilt, or defensive behaviors. These reactions stem from multiple factors: taboos around discussing race, the oversimplified good-bad binary of racism, media-shaped fears, belief in objectivity, awareness of racial inequalities, investment in current systems, and anti-black sentiment, both conscious and unconscious. White fragility can be triggered by various disruptions: challenges to claims of objectivity, people of color speaking about their racial experiences, feedback about racist impact regardless of intention, or encountering people of color in leadership positions. When challenged on racial issues, whites often position themselves as victims being slammed or attacked, though no physical violence occurs. This defense strategy positions whites as morally superior while obscuring their social power, redirects attention to their emotional needs, and blames those with less institutional power for causing discomfort. What if, instead of defending our racial innocence, we approached these moments with curiosity? What might we learn? Addressing racism isn't about guilt, it's about responsibility. While we didn't choose our socialization into racism, recognizing these patterns can be liberating. By accepting our involvement with racism, we can focus on stopping it rather than wasting energy on denial and defensiveness. When white fragility surfaces, breathe, listen, reflect, and examine assumptions. Learn to tolerate discomfort, challenge socialization, study racial history, follow leadership from people of color, and discuss race with other white people. Instead of seeking a positive white identity, impossible within a system of supremacy, we can work to be less white by increasing racial awareness, challenging arrogance, building authentic cross-racial relationships, and moving from guilt into action. To repair racial harm, process feelings with another accountable white person first, identify how racism was reinforced, then approach the person harmed. Take ownership without focusing on intentions, avoid passive language, admit the offense, listen to feedback, apologize sincerely, and commit to change. This work is lifelong and requires continuous learning. The question isn't whether racism has shaped us, it has. The question is, what we'll do about it? Will we choose comfort or will we choose growth?